I'm always thinking of when this deal goes to shit, who is going to stay on the boat? I just don't like that the incentive structure is such. Heads I win, tails you lose. So many people make a lot of quick money on heads I win, tails you lose deals. How am I getting protected in my downside? And how do I know that you're going to stay? What happens when things go to shit? The thing that I care about is I'm putting this cash in. How am I getting my cash out? And there's only two ways. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Today, we are going to talk about how to structure horrible deals. And I actually got a horrible deal recently, so I'm going to run you through why this deal was so horrible, so that way you don't have to structure horrible deals. And the reason why structuring horrible deals hurts so badly is because you can do all of this work and find the right business to buy or get into the right partnership. And especially if you're trying to bring money to the table, outside money to the table, you have to make sure that it's attractive and incentivizing to them. And the key principle, the thing that I always think about in deal structuring, is that pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. And what happens when most people try to structure a deal is they get too greedy for themselves and they want all of the upside with none of the downside. And that only attracts suckers. And so if you want people that aren't suckers to be in the boat with you as you're running a business or operating a piece of real estate or whatever it is you're trying to do, it's important that you signal the right things to the people that will give you money so that way it makes sense. And the deal that I'm going to run through is a deal that I was just told verbally. I was at a conference, and right as the conference was over, a guy came up to me and he said that he had this metal working shop that he was thinking about buying and that he wanted to raise money on it. He'd already raised 500 grand. He was looking for the last 500 grand to raise on, and the metal shop itself was doing about $300,000 a year in profit. So at those numbers, it looks like a pretty fair deal. Like that's not an insane purchase price. And so as he started walking me through the details, I started hating the deal more and more and more. The first thing that he was talking about was that he had raised 500 grand. I asked him who were the general partners. The general partners are the people that are typically going to be the ones operating the deal, running the deal. He said that it was a guy who had a metalworking shop already. This is going to be their second acquisition, and that they were going to raise all of the money. So I asked them how much they were going to put in as the general partners. He said that they planned on raising all of it and that the GPs weren't going to put any of the capital in. They were providing their expertise. I hate this structure more than anything, especially on a deal where there's no debt involved. It's one thing if you're buying a business or a piece of real estate and the general partners don't have that much cash, but they are willing to sign a personal guarantee on debt that limited partners aren't having to sign. That's one way that you can do a good deal for limited partners without having to answer like what happens. And the reason is there's one thing to align the incentives. And a lot of times people are talking about how do we share the upside of this deal in the way that's fair. But I'm always thinking of when this deal goes to shit, who is going to stay on the boat and shovel the shit out of the ship to make sure that the thing still goes? And when you have general partners that are only thinking about how they'll participate when the thing goes well, and they don't have any real reason to not jump ship because they have no skin in the game, they have no capital, it's just too easy for them to leave. I always like my general partners to lose everything that they own if I'm going to be participating in the deal and I'm going to be bringing capital to them. As you get older and if you've done enough deals and you're operating off of a track record, that becomes less important. But if this is your first or second deal and you're coming to pitch me in a Porsche and you're putting no money in and there's no debt that's going to keep you tied to this thing, I just don't like that the incentive structure is such. Heads I win, tails you lose. So many people make a lot of quick money on heads I win, tails you lose deals, but the limited partners, the people that are putting the capital in are the ones that hurt. And so if you're trying to structure a deal, something that's in any sophisticated person's head is, how am I getting protected in my downside? And how do I know that you're going to stay operating this thing, working on this thing, even when things go much worse than we anticipate them to be? And if you can answer that very well, then you will raise a lot of money and have a lot of deals that people will be happy to do with you, because the smart investors are thinking about return of capital is so much more important than return on capital. I just want to make sure that if I cut you a check for 500 grand, that I'm getting at least my 500 grand back. And how long does it take for me to get to the next dollar on top of that 500 grand? But if there's any real risk of me giving you 500 grand and losing it, then I want to know that if I lost 500 grand in the deal and you're the one that told me that it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, that you better be losing everything in that deal. And if you're not, then I don't do those deals, because I'm confident that if you lose everything, you'll work much harder than you would otherwise to make sure that my 500 grand is safe and everyone else makes it in the end. So incentives, and it's really downside incentives, like what happens when things go to shit? Today's episode is brought to you by the Exit Operating System. If you run a business right now and you are thinking about selling it one day and you want to know what you should focus on in order to maximize your exit value, go to exitos.io and sign up now. Peace. It will likely, if you're in any deal for like 5 to 10 years, whatever that deal is going to have to withstand a big disruption at some point. A market will crash, a massive customer relief. Like there's just no story ever that I've ever heard of that over a 10-year time horizon, the business only went up and to the right and it only crushed it and only great things happened. It just doesn't exist in the real world. And so when things start going the wrong way, who stays in and who makes sure that things will go correctly? So incentives are step number one. Step number two is, how are we getting out of this thing? We're working so hard to find these deals that we can get into, and a lot of times we don't spend enough time thinking about how the hell are we getting out of this thing, especially how are we getting our cash out. I care less about how we get out of the operational roles or whatever. The thing that I care about is, I'm putting this cash in, how am I getting my cash out? And there's only two ways. I'm either going to get it from cash flow distributions, because this thing is just going to be a cash cow, which means it'll usually be slower growth, but very cash generative. Or I'm going to get it on the exit value, which means that usually throughout the term of the business, I'm not going to be pulling that much money out and I'm not going to be making money month over month or quarter over quarter. But it's all going to be worth it, because at the end of the day, there's a big pot of gold and we're going to divvy it out, and I'm going to buy in at $1 million valuation and I'm going to sell at $100 million valuation and I'm going to 100x my money. Those are the two options. And if you don't have a clear path, so in the context of this deal that I was pitched, if you're doing a brick and mortar business, a metalworking business, you buy that type of business because it is a cash flow business. You buy it because it will be cash flow generative, but it's very difficult to build enterprise value and have it grow 10x up in value over time. It's just not very common. And so the mistake that he made is, he said, we're going to have cash distributions, but we're also going to work on a roll up strategy. We're going to roll these up, package them up, and sell it to private equity. I've heard this 100 times in pitches. This is a very cash flow generative business. So we're going to package up a bunch of super cash flow generative businesses. We're going to package them up and we're going to sell them to private equity. And they're going to take us out at a 10x multiple, even though we bought in at a 1x multiple. So I asked him, who are the active private equity firms in the metalworking shop space? He said, I don't know what any of those words mean. I don't know. And so you'll hear these people that'll talk about their exit strategy as a roll-up strategy, or sell to private equity, or go public, or do any of these things. And the problem is, it's stupid. But outside of that, it's also very, 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 very hard to do. And so when somebody says it's a roll-up strategy, then I want to know, who's a private equity fund that has raised committed capital that is in this space actively looking for acquisition targets? Because if it doesn't exist, if there's no private equity fund that's doing it, just the chances of it happening are so infinitesimally small that it's just not worth doing. And these are all guiding principles. There's always exception to all of these rules. And if someone says, yes, it's never been done before, but I think it will because of this, 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 I think that's great. These aren't right 100% of the time. They're just almost always right. And the exceptions I put off to the edge cases, and I don't worry about as much. So having a clear way to exit, or at least saying, if somebody pitched me on an escape room business now, after having been in it, or a trampoline park business, and I said, well, how are we getting out of this thing? And they said, well, we're going to package a bunch of these up and exit them. We're going to do a roll-up strategy. I would know that they're stupid, And because the right answer is we are going to cash flow these things and we're going to ride it until the sun comes home and we're going to do nothing but cash flow these things and we're going to make so much cash that we're never going to sell them. And that's the right answer in that type of business type. And so just making sure that the way that you get your cash out, that that answer that the person who's raising capital is giving is the answer that makes sense. And they're not just selling you a pipe dream that they heard on an Instagram reel and they've never done research on themselves. The third thing that I think of, the first was incentive. The second is exit strategy. And the third, which is kind of a subset of incentives. So I asked him who was going to do the diligence on the deal and make sure that this metalworking shop was operating the way that they said that it's operating. And his answer to me was that they didn't have anyone, that them as the GPs were going to do it. And so I asked him, if you're a general partner and you're putting no cash into this deal and you only make money if the deal gets done and you have no downside risk if this deal gets done, what are the chances that you're really going to unturn every single stone that exists in this business to make sure that this is the right deal? And he said, well, I guess I wouldn't have much incentive. Versus if you doing this deal and it goes poorly, you lose your house. I'm very confident, assuming that you're competent, I'm very confident that you will do the best you can to make sure that the deal gets done in the right way. So when you're looking to raise money from people, what they're really looking for are a couple things. One, will I get my money back and how long will it take? Return of capital versus return on capital. Two is, will you screw me somehow? And can I trust you to do the right thing when times get hard? And then lesser than that is, are you competent and do you know what you're doing and do you know what you're talking about and are you knowledgeable within this subject matter? But the first two, for me at least, are much more important than the third, because you can be the most competent whiz-bang person. And if I don't have confidence that you won't screw me when things get tough, and if I don't have confidence that you'll see this thing through the end, then the best deal in the world doesn't work with the wrong person who's running it. So allaying those concerns and making sure that they know that their capital is safe, or even just saying like, hey, your capital's not safe. This is a very very high risk bet, but a massive payout in tandem with that. That's a great answer too. And I've done some deals like that as well, knowing that I'm basically at the roulette table and taking a flyer on something that may or may not work out. And it'll take me a decade to know if I was right or wrong. And so those are the things that I think of when I'm looking at deals. And if you're bringing me a deal, and I hope that you do, please have those answered. So that way, like, we don't have to waste time, and it'll make you better at structuring things. Cause if you can get a good track record for raising capital, the aside to this is like, anytime that I see someone that's in there, like a real estate person that's been in real estate for, you know, 20 or 30 years, all of the best ones, they don't ever ask for capital. So when I see someone that's a little bit older and is like, I need capital, I'm always wondering, like, have you, or they've raised $100 million in the past, but like they're needing a $50,000 check. I'm assuming that they've screwed capital partners over in the past. And it's just strange to have someone that's raised that much money, not having capital partners, continuing to want to put money in with them to continue to grow. Because anyone that I've invested in that has given me a return that I was happy with, as soon as they give it back to me, I say, great, how can I give it back to you? And how can you keep doing what you're doing? Because I trust you. And then you just have to make sure that you're not in a Ponzi scheme somehow. But apart from that, it should be great. So that is the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Always remember that this podcast is not free. It costs you a 5-star review. So please do that. And we will see you on the next one. Peace.
You asleep?
Ta-da.